Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. College football is back in full swing. A crazy week one, might I add. Some very unfortunate outcomes for certain teams that I'm going to get into. Wasn't a pretty showing for Arch Manning in Texas as they travel up to the Horseshoe to take on the defending champions, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Some uncomfortable conversations are being had surrounding Kalen DeBoer at Alabama after their embarrassing loss against Florida State. LSU, they win the Battle of Death Valley, and they defeat Clemson on the road. And Miami, they win a renewed rivalry versus the Catholics, as they like to refer to them. They beat Notre Dame last night in Carson Beck's debut in a Miami uniform. Great game. I'm going to get into all that. This is going to be a game recap show to explain what happened, share my thoughts on it. I also have a primary complaint at the end of the show that you will definitely want to hear. And yeah, I did want to get out in front of something. So as you know, I was going through my win-loss predictions for each team in each Power Four conference. So I did the Big 12. I did the ACC. I did previews for last night's games. I did a preview for TCU and North Carolina. I previewed Georgia Tech and Colorado, Auburn, Baylor. Those games happened on Friday. But I did not do a preview for the shows that happened on Saturday. Well, I was planning on it, and then life happened. My wife and I had a major emergency plumbing incident, and that's as specific as I'd like to get on that. Completely flooded our carpet in our bedroom and our closet, so I was not able to get in to record an episode when I would have liked to. I was really hoping to get that to you by early Friday evening, late Friday afternoon, so that you would have something to listen to before the games kicked off on Saturday. I was not able to. I was devastated for a variety of reasons, but I just wanted to get out in front, so I did not leave you wondering what happened, but that is what happened. But it's okay, because one, our closet is being fixed, and it's going to get taken care of. It'll look better than ever. And two, I get to talk about actual football games that happened, and there were plenty of exciting events. Please make sure that you are subscribed, first of all, to the Game Nashville Sports Network podcast, wherever you get your listening materials. You'll never miss an episode of The Air Raid. And please subscribe, because not only does it not cost you anything, but it helps us out here at the station. And also, please follow me on the socials, because I'm putting content out left and right, lists, different previews, picks, all of it. And you're not going to want to miss that. So now that that is out of the way, Texas and Ohio State played this past weekend, just in case you were wondering, a rematch of the national semifinal game that took place last year, in which Ohio State also won that battle. But Ohio State won the season opener as well versus the Texas Longhorns, a classic SEC versus Big Ten matchup. Ohio State wins 14-7. Now, as we do on this show, we discuss the winners first. So I will get to Arch Manning in Texas in a second, but I want to focus on Ohio State. What was impressive about Ohio State on Saturday was not the offense, it was the defense. I've been talking about Ohio State a lot on this show, and what I have been saying is Ohio State had the first or the second most players drafted in last year's NFL draft. So they lost a lot of starters. They lost a lot of experience. Here's the thing about Ohio State. Ohio State does not have the same problems that other teams have around the country, meaning that Ohio State recruits at a top-tier level. They backfill with 4- and 5-star guys. So while those guys may not be as experienced as the guys that left, and while you may not know their names right now, that doesn't make them any less talented, because they are. The only difference is they don't have the game experience that, let's say, a JT Tolumoleau has, or a Jack Sawyer, or guys like that, a Will Howard, a Travion Henderson. But there is still plenty of talent on the roster, and that was very evident, especially on defense. Now, Ohio State brought in a new defensive coordinator over the spring, and that was Matt Patricia, a former Super Bowl winning, part of the Patriots when they won a couple of Super Bowls. He is now the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, and Matt Patricia is a dang good defensive coordinator, and that was on full display Saturday. A lot of people bashed Arch Manning for his performance on Saturday, and I will agree that he did not play his best. He didn't play great. He didn't play good. Ohio State's defense gave him fits. I thought Dan Orlovsky and Booger McFarland did an excellent breakdown on ESPN the other day. So oftentimes, and I'm going to get into a little bit of the X's and O's here, just so that you have an understanding of what all went on Saturday. Ohio State showed several looks pre-snap, before the ball was snapped, that they were going to bring pressure, meaning sometimes they would have six, seven guys all bunched up, lined up at the line of scrimmage. So Arch Manning saw one look pre-snap, but then post-snap, you would have three or four of those guys back off. Texas would have a route concept, and oftentimes Ohio State's defense, it just becomes a simple math game at that point, because Ohio State would have three defenders matched up against Texas's two defenders. Sometimes they would have four defenders up against a Texas three receivers. So it turned into a math game. And from that point, Arch Manning didn't have many places to go with the football. So Ohio State's defense really stuck out to me. Julian Sain, he was 13 of 20 for 126 yards and a touchdown. Did not turn the ball over. That was Ryan Day's message to Julian Sain from the beginning, was, we don't need you to put on the cape. You're a freshman. We don't need you to put on the cape. Just go out there and win. And they won. Ohio State's running game, they had 77 yards total. C.J. Donaldson, the transfer from West Virginia, 19 carries for 63 yards, which equates to a 3.5 yard per carry average. He did have a touchdown. James Peoples, 10 carries for 20 yards. So the running game was not great. It's certainly, from this game's perspective, does not look as dynamic as it was last year when you had Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. So that is certainly going to be something that you're going to want to keep an eye out for with Ohio State in the future. Now let's talk about Texas. One of the things that Steve Sarkisian is known for, and why he's such a great offensive coordinator, and that was not, if you just watched this Texas-Ohio State game on Saturday, you don't know much about Steve Sarkisian, you don't know a lot about Texas, you would think that Steve Sarkisian, who's the one calling the plays, is not a great offensive mind. But he is, and that has been proven over the last several years. Steve Sarkisian, one of the things that he's known for is using a lot of motions, a lot of eye candy pre-snap to throw the defense off, a lot of misdirections. Didn't think he did a lot of that. In fact, he did not on Saturday. And that is an extra tool in the tool bag that Texas offense has that they didn't utilize. So that put a little bit more pressure on Arch Manning to perform, which obviously you're asking a sophomore quarterback to go on the road, making his first true road start in Columbus, Ohio, out of all places. Not an easy place to play. Arch Manning, 17 of 30 for 170 yards, one touchdown, one interception. He did have a lot of bad throws, and that statistical category is kind of, don't put a lot of stock in that, because a lot of those yards came in the fourth quarter. I believe it was Arch Manning, and don't necessarily quote me on this, but it seemed like he had about 30 yards going into the fourth quarter, which I did not expect. It was not an offensive affair whatsoever. But Texas's defense did keep them in the game, because Texas had a chance to tie it up and maybe even win it if they went for two and got it on the last drive of the game. But Ohio State's defense held strong, and they stopped them. So Arch Manning is going to get a lot of criticism, but may I remind you that Arch Manning put zero expectation on himself. The media did it. And I warned you in a few episodes back, don't be too quick to crown guys. let's let him play. I believe Arch Manning will be able to bounce back. I believe he is uber talented. And I don't think he'll see another defense like that the rest of the season, because what Matt Patricia threw at him, not many people would have success, especially a freshman making their first true road start. All right, now we got to get into the difficult conversation, and that was Alabama at Florida State. Real quick, want to talk about the winners, which were the Florida State Seminoles. And how about it? Thomas Castellanos, do we owe him an apology? I'll be the first one to say I think we all deserve to give him an apology, because what he said in June and July and August about they don't have Nick Saban to save them, honestly, I don't see anyone being able to stop me. And he was right. He backed it up. There is a certain aspect of when you talk trash like that and you go out and back it up, hey, I have nothing but respect for you, because Thomas Castellanos was not fantastic through the air. He made plays with his arm when there needed to be plays made through the air. He was 9 of 14 for 152 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But what was the difference for Florida State? And that was the run game. Alabama allowed 230 rush yards on the ground for Florida State. Thomas Castellanos led the way. 16 carries, 78 yards, a touchdown, almost a 5 yard per carry average, 4.9 to be exact. Thomas Castellanos backed up what he said all the way back in June, I believe, and he made a fool of Alabama's defense, and he made a fool out of me, because you remember I predicted when I did the episode with Connor, I predicted Alabama to win the national championship. How is that pick looking about right now? Not so hot. Not so hot. I will say, I may have to backtrack on that, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. So Florida State gets it done. They beat Alabama 31-17. It was not as close as the score indicated, because Florida State, yeah, Alabama had, they scored the first touchdown of the game, but then Florida State scored 24 unanswered. And from that point, you could pretty much call it a game, because there was no way that Alabama was going to come back from what Florida State did to them. I thought some of their receivers made some big-time plays when needed. There were no standouts when you're looking at the box score. Jalen Lucas, 2 receptions for 66 yards. Squirrel White, if you remember that name, a former Tennessee Volunteer, transferred to Florida State in the winter portal window. He had a reception for 40 yards. So the aerial attack was not great for Florida State, but what was great was the run game. Now we have to have a difficult conversation. And I hate to do this on this show, but we're going to have to talk about Kalen DeBoer. I already know the discourse in Tuscaloosa is not great. I already know the discourse nationally is not great. So I'm going to try to be as level-headed as I can. There is a problem right now at Alabama, and that's I know I'm stating the obvious here, but let me further explain myself. When Nick Saban walked out the door at Alabama, having won 6 national championships during his time as the Crimson Tide head coach, I believe that era of a dynasty lasting for multiple decades, I believe that era of collegiate athletics is over. I believe NIL and transfer portal, while it hasn't evened the playing field completely, it has evened it for some of the top-tier programs, which means there are more teams capable of actually winning a national championship than I'd say there were in the past. When Nick Saban walked out the door, no, Alabama was not going to go get somebody on the same caliber. And that's just the truth. Because what Nick Saban did at Alabama is not going to be replicated. And it's not going to be replicated by guys like Kirby Smart. It's not going to be replicated by guys like, Steve Sarkisian, a Dan Lanning. What Nick Saban did was so special, and that's why he is, many of us, myself included, consider him the greatest coach of all time in college. Kalen DeBoer, I will say, is a winner because he's won everywhere he has gone. But the fans in Tuscaloosa, all they know is winning because of what Nick Saban was able to do. So when you don't win against unranked opponents, it sets off a trigger. Fans start to press the panic button, which they are doing right now. I saw a stat today that Kalen DeBoer in his first, and this is young, I mean, one game into his second year, but so far during his tenure at Alabama, he has lost 4 matchups against unranked opponents. Nick Saban, throughout his career at Alabama, only lost 4 times to an unranked opponent. So here's what I will say. Because Oregon, they played Idaho week 1 of last year, only won by 3 points. Folks started to hit the panic button on Oregon. And then Oregon went and rattled off 13 straight wins before their egregious loss in the Rose Bowl to Ohio State. So I'm not throwing in the towel on Alabama. And I'm being more patient with Kalen DeBoer than a lot of you all are. But there is a problem at Alabama in terms of not giving max effort. Josh Pate has talked about this with Josh Pate's College Football Show. Dan Orlovsky has talked about this. Dan Orlovsky put out this tweet today. He went back and he watched the film, and he counted 21 loaf plays from Alabama against Florida State. I can confidently say that would not have happened for a Nick Saban coach team. But what I'm concerned about is why weren't those players held accountable by their teammates in the locker room? If you're loafing and if you're giving anything other than max effort for any given play on the field, your teammates should hold you accountable for that. Your coaches obviously are, but sometimes they shouldn't be the ones that have to do that. It's up to the players. Player-led teams are often the best teams. And right now, that is a major concern at Alabama because we're seeing this happen consistently where a wide receiver may drop the football, you may not be running to the football all the way, you're not giving max effort, and that is a concern at Alabama. So that has to get fixed, and that ultimately is pinned on Kalen DeBoer because he's the head coach, and the head coach is going to get a lot of criticism. So that's something that is going to have to change. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but I have other game recaps to do, and it just doesn't seem like I can honestly go for 2 hours if I wanted to, but I'm not going to take up 2 hours. But we have more game recaps to get to on the other side. LSU wins the battle of Death Valley. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You may recognize that fight song. If you do, that is LSU's fight song. And I wanted to open the segment with that because they got a big win over the Clemson Tigers this last Saturday. LSU has gotten their first week 1 win since 2019. And yes, I will repeat that because I believe that bears needing a repeat. LSU has not won a week 1 game since 2019, and they get their first win in over half a decade in week 1 on Saturday night versus a very, very solid Clemson team. So much like I talked about in the Texas-Ohio State segment, this was a defensive affair. LSU, Clemson, what have they been known for over the last couple of years? That is offense. You think of all the great quarterbacks that LSU has had recently, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, both of which were Heisman Trophy winners. And now you have Garrett Nussmeier, year 2 as the starting quarterback at LSU, has a lot of experience. He's a gunslinger. LSU, one of the best offensive teams in the country over the last couple of years. Clemson, also very, very good offensively. They averaged well over 400 yards per game last season. They averaged about 35 points per game, which ranked top 20 nationally last season. And what did LSU do? Held them to 10 points. LSU has been allergic to making tackles the last couple of years. They hired Blake Baker, who's the defensive coordinator for Missouri. He was in year one as the defensive coordinator last season, and now he is in year two. And I think year two is going to be the difference, because that's when we're going to see this defense really start to put it together. LSU did improve on defense last year. They still were not great, but I think this year they can be great, because you have guys like Whit Weeks at linebacker, who is a preseason All-American. You have guys like Harold Perkins, who is now playing the star position. That's where that defensive staff believes fits him best. It's kind of like a hybrid safety linebacker type role. They'll have him rushing the passer. They'll have him out in coverage. They'll have him doing different things. I trust Blake Baker infinitely, especially with the guys that he has on defense. They went and they backfilled some to fill in some holes, especially in the secondary through the portal. They got some pieces on that defensive line, and it really worked out for them well on Saturday night. And that's really what I wanted to talk about. Was you're talking about a Clemson team who has one of the Heisman Trophy favorites in Cade Klubnik at quarterback, which many draft experts, draft scouts believe could be the first quarterback selected in the 2026 NFL draft. You have a trio of receivers in Bryant Wesco, TJ Moore, Antonio Williams. Antonio Williams did not play a lot on Saturday, but they have a chance to have one of the best trio of receivers in the country. But we talk about winners first, and that's what we're going to do. I wanted to talk about LSU because Garrett Nussmeier, he was 28 of 38 for 230 yards and a touchdown, which was a solid performance. I wouldn't classify it as one of his better performances. They got decent production out of the run game, still not where they would like to have it, I'm sure. Caden Durham led the way with 17 carries for 74 yards and a touchdown. They had 108 as a team. Aaron Anderson really was a breakout player in this game, 6 receptions for 99 yards. So LSU did some things on offense against a very stacked Clemson defense. Clemson has NFL players on all three levels of the defense. But LSU, they made plays on offense when they needed to, but the defense was the story. And that's something we haven't said about LSU in a while. Now let's flip the page to Clemson. Clemson has high expectations. They're the favorite in the ACC, and given the schedule that they have remaining, they still very well could win out. Now, they have a tough opponent week 3. They're at Georgia Tech. But other than that, I don't see a lot of banana peels in the way for Clemson to slip up. So they could very well win out, and that's why I said, like, I think LSU really needed this game more than Clemson needed the game. Not saying that both teams aren't playing to win. They are, and I'm so happy we got this as a week 1 matchup. But LSU needed this win. One, because if they didn't win this game, I could not imagine the discourse around Baton Rouge. I couldn't imagine the discourse around Brian Kelly nationally. And if you look at the schedule LSU has coming up, it is not kind. So they needed this game, and it boosted my confidence in LSU, who I predicted to win the SEC. Clemson, on the other hand, they may have a similar problem to what LSU had last year. And that is, you have a really good quarterback in Cade Klubnik. You have really good wide receivers. You have an experienced offensive line. But what do you lack? And that is a run game. Clemson lost Phil Maffa to the NFL draft. They have Adam Randall, who is their starting tailback, who is a converted wide receiver. And he had 5 carries for 16 yards and a score. Overall, Clemson had 31 rushing yards on 20 attempts, which, you do the math, 1.6 yards per carry. LSU didn't have much of a run game last year with Caden Durham, although he did come on strong late. And maybe that could be the same with Clemson. I don't know. But just given what I saw in week 1, LSU's running rush attack, non-existent. And that was a problem. I thought the defense, you hold LSU to 17 points, although I argue it should have been more given the touchdown that was called back, but I'm going to save that for later. The defense held LSU to 17 points, which is really good considering how explosive that offense has been under Brian Kelly. So I thought the defense was good, but on offense, you had a decent passing game. But where was the run game? That was one of the big problems for Clemson in this game versus LSU. Now I do want to talk about another game that was played. And this game was on Sunday night. Miami and Notre Dame. A very classic. It's been a phenomenal Labor Day weekend in terms of matchups. Miami wins this one, as I correctly predicted, 27-24. Let's talk about Miami. So Carson Beck made his debut. I thought, for the most part, he played very well. I thought there were times where he was really accurate. I thought he was, for the most part, smart with the football, did not have any interceptions, although he did throw a couple of floaters up there that if the DBs from Notre Dame were in a little bit better of a position, they might have gotten picked off. I think the big difference for Miami was the line of scrimmage, and there's no hiding it. Because Miami, although they only had 127 rush yards, it felt like they had more because the offensive line for Miami has a chance to be the best offensive line in America. It was so funny going back and watching some of the replays. That offensive line was manhandling Notre Dame's defensive line. I mean, the displacement of the gold helmets was crazy. In Miami, they lost their running back, Damian Martinez, but they were able to have guys like Jordan Lyle and Mark Fletcher and Shamar Brown back there running the football. I think if they kind of do a running back by committee type thing, I really think Miami can have a really good run game this year, and that is going to complement Carson Beck, who is not a trash quarterback, by the way. People forget that he was being talked about as the potential number one overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft. Let's talk about the receivers for Miami because there were certainly a lot of highlight plays. Malachi Toney, 6 receptions for 82 yards and a touchdown. He's a true freshman, folks. He's a true freshman, and I would make the case that he is their best receiver as it stands right now. Miami lost their top half dozen pass catchers from last year's team, but they have guys like Malachi Toney, CJ Daniels, Keelan Marion, who are all catching passes for them. CJ Daniels may have had the catch of the year in week one. That one-handed snag in the end zone that Carson Beck was getting pressure, just kind of floated it up there, and CJ Daniels pulls it down with the right hand, one-handed catch. That and the Vernon Brown catch, I'm not sure how many of you saw this, but Vernon Brown is a receiver at Florida. Had a OBJ-like catch against LIU in Florida's week one game. If you have not seen that already, please go look it up because those two catches, getting them on the same weekend, both of which will probably be up for catch of the year candidates when it's all said and done. Keelan Marion, a transfer from BYU. CJ Daniels, a transfer from LSU by way of Liberty. They stepped up and made plays. And it's just truly incredible what a difference it makes when you have receivers that are catching the football, because Carson Beck did not have receivers that caught the football last season at Georgia. Their run game was not up to par for what the Georgia standard is. So if Miami has a good running game this year, they have receivers that catch the football for Carson Beck like they did last night, like they did during the monsoon rain that was coming down. Miami, we're going to be talking about them in the college football playoff. So I was thoroughly impressed with Miami, and they get a big statement win in week one over a top six opponent. Mario Cristobal gets a pretty big statement win during his early tenure back home with the Hurricanes. Now let's talk about Notre Dame. CJ Carr is going to get talked about a lot. I thought CJ Carr played very well for his first time starting on the road. Coral Gables, he was 19 of 30 for 221 yards, 2 touchdowns. Had the interception. Now, I will say on the interception, it was a screen, Notre Dame ran a lot of screens, so I believe Miami just picked up on the fact that, hey, they're running this, and they knew exactly what to do. They kind of blew it up. I would have advised C.J. Carr to dirt it or throw it away, but he threw it. Of course, it got tipped up in the air and picked off. There were a lot of passes that were tipped up in the air for Notre Dame that's a quarterback's worst nightmare, tips and overthrows, because it has a great chance of being intercepted. But C.J. Carr's poise down the stretch, having a chance to win the game late, they were down 24-14, and Notre Dame scores 10 unanswered before Miami gets the game-winning field goal. They had a chance to win late. And the poise of the redshirt freshman quarterback, unbelievable. It was awesome. Two things that really hurt Notre Dame in this game. Jeremiah Love, he did not get a lot of touches. And this was a preseason first team All-American. He had 10 carries for 33 yards. He needs more touches. Now, I don't know. They mentioned this on the broadcast last night. Sean McDonough did. I don't know if Jeremiah Love has an undisclosed injury that we just don't know about at this point. He did kind of have a lingering injury when Notre Dame made their playoff run that kind of slowed him down a little bit. But I'm not sure if he had one or what. But you need to give him more touches. He's a preseason first-team All-American for a reason. Jadarian Price, also a very good running back. They have a great 1-2 punch. Jadarian Price, only 6 carries for 45 yards. As a team overall, Notre Dame had less than 100 rush yards. They rushed for 94 yards. That can't happen, and you win very many games this year. So obviously, they're going to have to give more touches to those guys, and you're banking on them being healthy. Jaden Greathouse, who I would say is probably their best receiver, did not have a reception last night. They relied on some of their transfers at wide receiver, including Malachi Fields, who's a transfer from Virginia. Their tight end, Eli Raridan, 5 receptions for 97 yards. He led the way in receiving. Got to get Jaden Greathouse more involved. Got to get Chris Pauling, who's a transfer wide receiver from Wisconsin. Got to get him more involved. And that's going to be the key for Notre Dame. But I think C.J. Carr showed what he can be. And that is a quarterback prospect with sky-high potential. I was impressed with both teams, honestly. I just wish Notre Dame would have given Jeremiah Love more carries and at least gotten the ball to Jaden Greathouse more than, 0 times. That's all I'm saying. All right. That wraps up our in-depth game recaps. We went through 4 of the biggest games. I'm going to make some touch points on some of the other games. I'm not going to go as in depth. That's coming up on the other side. You're listening to the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Third segment here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We just got through a bunch of game recaps, some in-depth game recaps, but I wanted to make a couple of touch points on some of the other games that were played this weekend. How about Tennessee? They beat Syracuse in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Saturday, this game was being played the same time Ohio State and Texas was, but Tennessee defeated Syracuse 45-26 in Joey Aguilar's debut with the team. Joey Aguilar coming over to Knoxville from UCLA by way of App State. We all know how this situation played down with Nico, and I'll get into that a little bit later on in the segment. But Joey Aguilar, hey Vols fans, you got to be impressed with the way that he performed, because there were a lot of question marks, a lot of unprovens with Tennessee. Now, this was week 1. There's still 11 more games to go in the regular season. But after week 1, you got to feel good. Joey Aguilar, 16-28, 247 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. The 76-yard play-action bomb to freshman Braylon Staley. It was that play when I'm like, okay, this is exactly what Josh Heupel wants to do on offense that he could not necessarily do with Nico Iamaleava last year. Nico had an issue with overthrowing guys and missing guys, was kind of inaccurate with the football. Joey Aguilar, on the other hand, is a more so of a gunslinger. I'm not saying that Joey Aguilar has more talent than Nico. He is more experienced, and Joey Aguilar is the definition of a gunslinger. That's why he had so many interceptions last year, because he takes chances. He takes deep shots. The good thing is, for Tennessee to be able to operate its offense how they want to, they can't have a lot of turnovers by the quarterback. And I believe with everything that happens so fast, it doesn't allow room for quarterbacks to turn the ball over much. So that Joey Aguilar 76-yard play action bomb to redshirt freshman Braylon Staley was kind of like a breath of fresh air, a cold drink of water to Vols fans. And I thought Joey Aguilar operated the offense very smoothly. They were quick. I believe the tempo was right where Josh Heupel wanted it to be. He did have some overthrows. There were a couple of drops by the receivers that needed to be brought in. That stuff, I'm sure, will get cleaned up and worked on throughout the course of the season. The good news is it is week one. Of course, Tennessee is going to run the ball very effectively, 248 yards on the ground. Josh Heupel's always had a good run game. That is true. And, I just wanted to point out that, I saw Joey Aguilar's performance. I watched the game. I had the double screen pulled up. I was watching Texas-Ohio State. I was watching Tennessee-Syracuse, and I was impressed. I was very impressed. Now, let's go out west. And, yes, I am going to go here because I know for a fact. I saw Twitter. I checked the mentions. I checked the message boards. I saw – there was a healthy amount of representation from Tennessee that were watching UCLA and Utah for, I don't know, a certain quarterback that transferred. I was also watching this game, but not necessarily for the same reasons that Vols fans were watching. I was watching Utah and UCLA. That's because I have been very high on Utah. I believe that we should be having the same discussions with Utah that we're having with Oklahoma. Because Oklahoma, they brought over their quarterback from Washington State, John Mateer. They also brought over his offensive coordinator, his quarterback's coach, and they've implemented Washington State's offense in Norman. The same is being done in Utah because they went out and they got New Mexico quarterback Devin Dampier, who we're all going to learn about because he had a great performance on Saturday night, and I believe he'll just continue to scale up as the season goes on. They brought over New Mexico's offensive coordinator and Jason Beck. So Devin Dampier doesn't have to learn a new offense. And Devin Dampier was fantastic because Utah beat UCLA 43-10. Devin Dampier, listen to this stat line. 21 of 25 for 206 yards, two touchdowns. It gets better. 16 carries for 87 yards on the ground and another score, averaged over 5 yards per carry on the ground. Utah as a team lit it up on the ground, 286 rush yards in total for the Utes. They did whatever they wanted to UCLA's defense. Watch out for Utah. Utah is not going to have the same season they had last year where they went 4-8. That just does not happen. That is an anomaly under Kyle Whittingham. That stuff just does not happen often. I believe Utah is legit this year. UCLA, Nico Iamaleava, the starting quarterback. Vols fans, I'm sure, are going to have fun with this stat line. 11 of 22 for 136 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Nico also led the team in rushing, 13 carries for 47 yards, 3.6 yards on the ground. Nico did not play great. I did watch this game. He did not play great. He's still struggling with some of the same things that he struggled with at Tennessee, where he's overthrowing receivers. There was a really bad overthrow that would have went for a touchdown midway through the first quarter. He gets to his first read, and then when it's not there, he kind of panics when he doesn't need to panic. Some of the same things that happened at Tennessee are still very present, at least in his first game with UCLA. We'll see how that looks as the season goes on. Nico is still very well known nationally for many reasons. He's still a former five-star. The talent is still there, but will it all come to together? And I'm sure a lot of you are answering that for me as I speak. Okay, South Carolina and Virginia Tech. this was another good game for a majority, and then South Carolina kind of pulled away a little bit in the fourth quarter. Lenore Sellers, man, the more I watch that guy, the more I think, okay, this guy could be in New York at the end of the year. Okay, this guy may be the first overall pick in the 2026 draft, because someone that big and that strong should not be able to move the way he does. Cannon for an arm. There was a scramble that he made in the second half where he shed a tackle from a big defensive tackle from Virginia Tech, broke another tackle, and got at the first down. I believe it was on a third and long, and it was just like, man, like, that dude was constructed in a lab. And who is he throwing to? A guy by the name of Nick Harbor. And this is how you know Nick Harbor is legit, because he spells his name not with an I, but with a Y. So N-Y-C-K, Nick Harbor, okay? Nick Harbor is an alien at wide receiver. He is a track star, or was former track star. He gave that up to focus on football. But athletically, he's about as good as it gets. He's long, he's rangy, he's strong, he's rocked up, he's fast. Fastest guy on the field at any given point. He's got Lenore Sellers throwing to him. And when Nick Harbor, we still need to see some things out of Nick Harbor. He has not lived up to his full potential yet. Still needs to learn how to catch the football on a more consistent basis, not letting it hit your body catch it, but using your hands. But once he figures that out, he's going to be unstoppable. And pretty much for the most part, he already is. Just send him deep and let Lenore Sellers throw to him. It's a cheat code. They also had good production out of the running back room. Oscar Attaway, 14 carries, 60 yards. Rasul Faison, who was transferred from Utah State, who we weren't sure if he was going to be eligible or not, but he was ruled eligible right before the season starts. 7 carries for 40 yards. They got great production out of the running back room. Dylan Stewart. He had a sack. He had 7 total tackles, one and a half tackles for loss. He did exit the game for a brief amount of time. It looked like he was nursing a shoulder thing. But when they're all out there, I mean, South Carolina looked good. And I honestly thought Virginia Tech looked good for the most part. Their defense especially kept South Carolina in check for about 3/4 of the game. Their receivers stepped up and made some really big contested catches. Kyron Drones played okay. That first interception that he had was really, really bad, so I'm not going to gloss over that. But it was a fun game to watch. The Beamer Bowl. Shane Beamer beats his dad's former employer in Atlanta on a Sunday afternoon. One more game that I wanted to get to. Georgia Tech and Colorado. This game was played on Friday night. I predicted Georgia Tech to win. They did, although they did scare me at the start. Georgia Tech spotted Colorado 3 touchdowns. Georgia Tech spotted Colorado 3 turnovers on the Yellow Jackets' first 3 drives. So Haynes King had an interception. There were a couple fumbles, and those all happened on the first 3 drives of the game for Georgia Tech. It was not pretty whatsoever. And yet Georgia Tech still won the game 27-20. Some of the problems that were there for Colorado still there, at least in the first game of the young regular season. And Brent Key, who's the Georgia Tech head coach, made some comments right before the Ramblin' Wreck played this game about how he thought his team was nowhere close to being able to play or nowhere close to ready to play. And that showed in the first 3 drives of the game. So if you're hoping, if you're a Georgia Tech fan, that you can iron out some of those kinks, and if they do, they are. I predicted them to be in my ACC championship game versus Clemson. So I just wanted to touch on that. And then a real quick remark on Auburn-Baylor. Auburn did win the game over Baylor. Auburn, Jackson Arnold and their running back room ran all over Baylor. And that was the storyline of the game. I thought that was another great one, and Auburn really needed that win. So big win for Hugh Freeze and company. One more thing I want to get to. This is the part I told you to wait on. I have a primary complaint regarding CFP officiating. I'll get to that. One more segment to go here on the Air Ed with Parker Kelly, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I needed something soothing in terms of music for this segment that I'm about to do, because I have one primary complaint, and for how glorious this weekend of college football was, and it was awesome, and we get to cap it all off tonight with TCU in North Carolina. We still have a college football officiating problem in America, and I was watching that LSU-Clemson game that There was a touchdown, I believe it was in the third quarter, to Xavion Thomas. And from my perspective, it looked like it was a touchdown. And they went through it and they showed all the replays. It looked like a touchdown. That call got reversed and it was not a touchdown. There was a South Carolina touchdown, Lenore Sellers to Nick Harbor in the second half, that I believe was originally ruled a touchdown. Lewis Riddick, who was on the call, said he thought it was a touchdown as well. And that call got called back and it wasn't a touchdown anymore. I'm like, okay. I personally thought it was a touchdown. I thought South Carolina kind of got screwed out of a touchdown there. I thought LSU got screwed out of a touchdown. There was a Michigan, they were playing New Mexico on Saturday night. There was a targeting call on one of their defensive tackles, Jayshon Barnum, that was not a targeting call in my perspective. It seems like this rule on targeting changes at the 11th hour of each season, which is very frustrating for the fan, because now Michigan will be without one of their better defensive tackles, better defensive players, in their first half of their big-time matchup versus Oklahoma next Saturday night. We have a college football officiating problem, and here's where I want to start. We need a national standard of officiating, because the SEC, and I'm just using hypotheticals here, the SEC has a specific thing that they key on when it's a SEC officiating crew. The Big Ten has something they specifically focus on when it's a Big Ten officiating crew. Same thing with the ACC, same thing with the Big 12, same thing with the Group of Five, or Group of Six, or whatever. There needs to be a national standard so there are not multiple interpretations of a rule when it's different crews. And here's the other thing I want to see. When a referee makes a bad call, which it's going to happen, when they make a bad call, they should be held accountable for it. Because we'll see post-game coaches or players having a comment on a bad call that was made, and of course they can't speak on it without getting fined. So why can't we have a referee explain, hey, here's why we made the call? We don't get that. They get to officiate the game. Ultimately, for the most part, they can control the outcome of a game based on a couple of calls, and they don't have to speak for it. They just collect their paycheck and go home. And I'm not coming after the officials. That's not what I'm doing, because the officials are in constant communication with the league offices and their different locations across the United States. So let's say the SEC offices in Birmingham are telling the SEC crews, hey, focus on this, call this. The officiating crew of that game has to do what they're told by the league offices. So this is more so holding the league offices accountable rather than the people actually making the calls, if that makes sense. But I believe that the fans deserve this, the players deserve this, the coaches deserve, hey, like, if you make a bad call, okay, you make a bad call, and we're going to be mad about it, but at least you should be held accountable for that after the game. Explain why you made the call that you made. And that's all we're asking for, because there were three really bad calls that I noticed, and I'm sure there were more, but there were three specific that really stood out to me that, hey, these referees, they need to be held accountable for. And that's all I have to say regarding that. That is my primary complaint. But hey, a great slate of Labor Day weekend games nonetheless. We have one more coming up. Bill Belichick makes his debut, Chapel Bill. They take on TCU tonight. Cannot wait. My butt will be parked on the couch. I'll be watching every second of it. Lots of great games this weekend. And think about it, baby. Week two is upon us. I'll be doing some picks, some previews. A new PK poll will come out as well. So be on the lookout for that. I'll try to have that episode up by Wednesday or Thursday. But yeah, make sure that you're subscribed to the Game Nashville podcast, where you will get every episode of the Air Raid. And also follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10.